It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Two car bombs in Jos, Nigeria kill at least 118. Western nations pledge another $600 million in aid to South Sudan. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Two car bombs moments apart Tuesday killed nearly 120 people in the central Nigerian city of Jos. This witness saw what happened as he walked to Terminus, the downtown area of the city.
For the number of people I saw, there were pieces and they were scattered in the car, they were taking them out. Some in the wheelbarrow, they were being taken out. They were scattered and there were pieces. So around there, before the bridge in Terminus, I saw there was a car that was there, a Sienna car was there. So people came and they were stoning up the Sienna and were there. So when we were running, then we saw the explosion of the Sienna and we ran and we left there. That was how I saw the incident.
No one has claimed responsibility, but suspicion fell on Boko Haram, the Islamist extremist group blamed for thousands of deaths since 2009 as it tries to set up a conservative Muslim state in Nigeria's north. President Goodluck Jonathan called the bombings cruel and evil, saying he's fully committed to winning the war on terrorism. Meanwhile, lawmakers voted Tuesday to extend a state of emergency for 6 months in the northeast, where Boko Haram is most active. The group says it was behind last month's kidnappings of nearly 300 schoolgirls from a remote village in Borno State. A presidential spokesman, Ruben Abati, Tuesday explained the outcome of a Paris summit Saturday on terrorism attended by African heads of state.
That every necessary measure should be taken to find the schoolgirls abducted by the Boko Haram terrorists from Government Girls Secondary School Chibok, Borno State, on 14th April 2014. That Nigeria and other countries in the sub-region will continue to cooperate and coordinate efforts to combat the Boko Haram menace.
He says the heads of state also agree to contribute troops to an international force to patrol border areas, in place an effective border management regime, halt the proliferation of small arms and light weapons to terrorists. The United States has promised another $300 million in humanitarian aid to South Sudan, where the United Nations says millions are at risk of starvation. The latest aid came at an international donors conference for South Sudan in Oslo Thursday. Participants pledged $600 million. But UN officials say that that's short of the $1.8 billion needed. Valerie Amos is the UN humanitarian chief.
In the 6 months since fighting broke out, there has been extreme violence and deliberate attacks on civilians, often based on ethnicity or political affiliation. Medical facilities have been destroyed. There has been widespread sexual violence, in fact, a targeted of women and children. The arming of previously demobilized groups, the recruitment of young people for military operations, and the use of cluster munitions.
South Sudan's foreign minister promised every effort to make sure the aid is given unhindered access. There's growing international concern about the case of a Sudanese woman who faces execution for refusing to renounce her Christian faith. The United States, the latest country to say it's deeply disturbed by the case. Jen Psaki, a U.S. spokesperson, says the 27-year-old Maryam Ibrahim also faces 100 lashes for adultery.
We call on the government of Sudan to respect the right to freedom of religion, including one's right to change one's faith or beliefs, a right which is enshrined in international human rights law, as well as in Sudan's own 2005 interim constitution. We call on Sudanese legal authorities to approach this case with the compassion that is in keeping with the values of the Sudanese people.
Washington has joined with Britain, the Netherlands, and Canada in expressing official concern. Unrest Tuesday marred elections in Malawi, where incumbent leader Joyce Banda is facing stiff challenges in the first democratic test of her rule. Soldiers were deployed in the commercial capital, Blantyre, Tuesday after angry voters set fires at some polling stations and blocked roads. Protesters alleged fraud after some polling stations opened late. Some protesters also complained names have been left off election ballots. The ballot also included elections for parliamentarians and local government officials. Results expected in about a week. Guinea-Bissau's Electoral Commission says José Mário Vaz has won the presidential election. The commission says Mr. Vaz, the candidate of the ruling PAIGC party, received nearly 62% of the vote in Sunday's second-round poll. He defeated an independent candidate, Nuno Gomes Namia.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, May 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Two car bombs killed 118 people Tuesday in Nigeria as the government again vows to end Boko Haram violence.
The security forces of Nigeria, they are committed, they are patriotic, they stand ready to engage the terrorists.
Ruben Abate is Special Advisor on Media and Publicity to Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan. Cameroon initiates the program against religious violence. A quarter million Zimbabweans in South Africa will have to reapply for permits when their visas expire this year. And South Sudan rebel leader David Yao Yao has arrived in Juba after ending his rebellion.
We are, of course, concerned about the bigger conflict that is ongoing and that the peace that has now been achieved with this agreement will expand to cover the whole of South Sudan.
Christian Menau is the political counselor of the European Union's delegation to South Sudan. There's been a new twist in the Oscar Pistorius trial in South Africa and a global plan to end newborn deaths. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Car bomb explosions minutes apart have killed at least 118 people in the central Nigerian city of Jos. The blast, which happened on Tuesday, flattened several buildings, and officials say they are expecting to find more bodies. No one has claimed responsibility, but suspicion immediately fell on Boko Haram, the Islamist extremist group blamed for thousands of deaths. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan calls Tuesday's bombings cruel and evil, and says he is fully committed to winning the war on terrorism. An advisor to Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan says the declaration of war on Boko Haram by African leaders and the international community at a just-concluded summit in Paris, France, is a game-changer that could help end the violence being perpetrated by the Islamist sect. Ruben Abate says intelligence reports show that Boko Haram has now become the Al-Qaeda of West Africa with links to other international terrorist groups. Abate tells reporter Peter Clotty that Nigeria's neighbors have reaffirmed their commitment to cooperate in combating Boko Haram.
President Jonathan just came back from the Paris summit on security in Nigeria. And it was at that meeting that this declaration was made that, look, the entire world must come together and fight this particular group in Nigeria, because the group is not just restricted to Nigeria. The group is part of an international network. And one of the phrases that came out of that meeting is that Boko Haram in Nigeria is in fact the Al-Qaeda of West Africa, because intelligence has revealed that it is linked not just to Al-Qaeda, but also to Akim, to Al-Shabaab, and other terrorist groups in the world. And the objective is to destabilize Nigeria, destabilize West Africa, and target other countries. And the activities of that group have shown very clearly that this is a group that constitutes a threat to our civilization.
What do you say to people who say that this is yet another talk shop and that promises have been made, but it's yet to be seen that there will be serious effort to really rein in and prevent or end the Boko Haram insurgency, not only in Nigeria, but also in the rest of West Africa and some part of the Central African region?
The Paris summit on the Boko Haram and security in Nigeria, West Africa, and Central Africa is not a mere talk show. The Paris summit was restricted to the issue of the neighboring countries working together with the international community. In terms of the agreements reached, I mean, the countries agreed to cooperate together, to coordinate patrols, to establish a system to pull intelligence together, to establish mechanisms for information exchange, to work together on border surveillance, and also to do intelligence pooling units, and ensure that, look, there is a global meeting of minds to ensure that terror does not overwhelm our civilization.
On the Twitter feed, pictures of Nigerian military searching for these girls have been depicted. Some Nigerians are saying that it appears that the military is not properly equipped to the superior equipment or military accoutrement that these terrorist groups are using. What is the government doing to better equip the Nigerian military to look for these girls and set them free?
Well, as for the pics that were posted on Twitter this evening, which I did, Look, a lot of people are ignorant about how the military operates or how security operations go. And that is why perhaps they make such insinuations. The security forces of Nigeria, they are committed, they are patriotic, they stand ready to engage the terrorists.
Ruben Abate is Special Advisor on Media and Publicity to Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. Cameroon has started a nationwide campaign against religions that preach violence. The campaign, which is also encouraging interreligious tolerance, is targeting young people who allegedly are being contacted to join the Nigerian militant group Boko Haram. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports for VOA from Yaoundé.
Cameroon has always prided itself on its peaceful character, even amid a glaring heterogeneity that cuts across religion, language, and culture. But religious intolerance rising in both Nigeria to the west and the Central African Republic to the east, Cameroon's government has embarked on a campaign to promote religious dialogue. Imam Jibrila Usman of Cameroon's Muslim Council says the campaign for tolerance is being carried out in all denominations.
We have talked about interreligious dialogue. You can be an imam, a priest, or a pastor. We are doing our best, educating our children, our populations, our full servants in churches, in mosques, to live in peace.
To many Muslims in Cameroon, the Boko Haram phenomenon is being instigated by a hate group that is simply using the name of Islam to defend a cause that has no foundation in conventional Muslim beliefs. Imam Sitan Muhammad says true Islam promotes friendly relations between neighbors.
Good neighborliness is trying to treat every people around us in the best of manners. When Islam starts to look at the neighbors, Islam goes beyond looking at whether they are really Muslims or non-Muslims and so on. Islam pays more attention on the fact that they are human beings like us. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, serve Allah and do good to parents, kinsfolk, orphans, those in need, neighbors who are near, and neighbors who are strangers.
Cameroon also invited other countries of the Lake Chad Basin Commission to join in the solidarity campaign. Nafisatu Salifu of Niger says thus far her country has avoided the type of conflict tearing apart Nigeria and the CAR.
In Niger, for now, even though we are surrounded by many countries that have such conflicts, but for now we don't really live that kind of conflict because first, our people are very tolerant. And let me also point out the strength of our government. Our government is very, very strict and very strong.
The campaign for religious tolerance is part of plans to check Boko Haram, which is said to be infiltrating into Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé.
It is Wednesday morning, May 21st, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now coming up at 14 minutes past the hour. Former South Sudan rebel leader David Yao Yao arrived in Juba Tuesday, marking the end of his rebellion against the government. Yao Yao told journalists upon his arrival that the agreement he signed with the government shows that conflicts in South Sudan can be resolved through peaceful means. As Charlton Doki reports for VOA from Juba, Yao Yao says he's ready to help resolve the current conflict between President Salva Kiir's forces and those allied to his former deputy, Riek Machar.
Yao Yao arrived in Juba aboard a United Nations plane amidst tight security and was immediately driven to a hotel. He told reporters he is happy to be back in Juba.
We thank God very much for bringing us safely in the air until we arrive at Juba International Airport.
Akot Lual, an advisor to President Kiir, welcomed Yao Yao to Juba.
It is a great day for all of us. And from here, we have to put our hand together and solve other problems like what we have done in before.
Yao Yao says the government agreed to some of his demands.
We have already finalized everything. So people now is not a mere people like before. It become a greater people, which is a great achievement in us. Especially the four communities who are given the responsibility of these greater people.
Bishop Emeritus of the Catholic Diocese of Torit, Paride Taban, who was the lead mediator in the government's talks with Yau Yau's group, says more fighting is not the answer.
We would like to see that now the South Sudan Cobra movement and army should work more for peace rather than for violence and war.
Presidential adviser Lual says military officials from both sides will work to reintegrate Yau Yau's forces into the SPLA. Up to 6,000 largely Murle youth are believed to have joined Yau Yau's rebellion. And hundreds of Jonglei-based soldiers and police of Murle ethnicity are thought to have defected to Yau Yau's side at the height of the rebellion. Christian Manal, political counselor of the European Union's delegation to South Sudan, welcomed the end of Yau Yau's rebellion.
We have supported this process and we will also support any measure that can help implement it properly and to stabilize the peace in this area. We are of course concerned about the bigger conflict that is ongoing and that the peace that has now been achieved with this agreement will expand to cover the whole of South Sudan.
Yau Yau first rebelled against Juba after he failed to win a parliamentary seat in the 2010 general elections, accusing the ruling SPLM party of rigging the elections. In 2011, he accepted an amnesty offer from President Kiir and returned to Juba, where he was promoted to the rank of SPLA general. But a year later, he fled to Khartoum and began his rebellion against the government in his home county of Pibor in Jonglei State. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
Leading Zimbabwean refugee groups in South Africa have dismissed recent press reports that Zimbabweans living in that country will not be allowed to review their permits or renew their permits when they expire in November. The South African government granted more than 250,000 Zimbabweans a special dispensation 4 years ago, allowing them to regularize their stay. There was no immediate official comment from the South African government. However, Communications Director Daniel Muzenda of the Zimbabwe Migrants International says it was agreed at their last meeting with South African officials that a new directive would come from the new cabinet that is yet to be sworn in following recent elections.
As of now, we do not have an official communication from the South African government on the issue of permits. As from March, they haven't communicated to us any modalities. And as an organization, we have also partnered with some other organizations like the South African Forum for International Solidarity, and then Solidarity Peace Trust, and the African Diaspora Association to engage the government. We are also looking at other issues, not only the issue of permits. The delay in documentation processing leading to people losing their jobs here in South Africa. There is also rampant corruption in the Home Affairs Ministry and a lot of harassment of Zimbabweans, especially by the South African police.
But why is it that the media is awash with news of the South African government having stopped issuing permits?
When I tried to find out from the Ministry of Home Affairs itself, there is nothing like that. As of now, the official position of the South African government, we are waiting for the modalities by the new minister who is going to be installed maybe in the next 2 weeks. So we are urging all our members not to panic and overreact and wait for the minister to give us the modalities, and then we will pick it up from there, Chris.
Daniel Muzenda is Communications Director of Zimbabwe Migrants International in South Africa. He was speaking from Johannesburg with Chris Gandhi of VOA South Sudan In Focus program, of VOA Zimbabwe program, excuse me. A South African court on Tuesday ruled that Olympic runner Oscar Pistorius must be admitted as an outpatient at a psychiatric hospital for mental observation. The prosecution persuaded the court to have him referred to psychiatrists to establish if he was mentally responsible when he shot and killed his girlfriend. However, as Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg, the referral has attracted mixed reactions from South Africans.
The murder trial of South African Paralympian Oscar Pistorius took a new twist on Tuesday when Judge Thokozile Masipa ordered him to undergo mental examination for up to 30 days. Pistorius shot and killed his girlfriend, River Steenkamp, through a locked bathroom door on February 14, 2013. He says he mistook her for an intruder at his house, while the state argues that he intentionally shot Steenkamp after she locked herself in the room following an argument between the two. Last week, Judge Masipa granted the prosecution's request to have Pistorius mentally examined after forensic psychologist Meryl Foster testified that the accused suffered from general anxiety disorder. On Tuesday, Judge Masipa delivered the order detailing how the examination will take place.
This is the order, that the accused present himself as an outpatient to the medical superintendent of the Vetkopis Hospital on 26 May 2014 at 9 o'clock in the morning, and on every weekday thereafter for a period not exceeding 30 days, as the court may from time to time determine.
Masipa also made it clear what she wants the three appointed psychiatrists and one psychologist to do.
Inquire into whether the accused, by reason of mental illness or mental defect, was at the time of the commission of the offence criminally responsible for the offences charged, whether he was capable of appreciating the wrongfulness of his act or of acting in accordance with an appreciation of the wrongfulness of his act.
The decision has attracted mixed feelings from South Africans. While some think the court is within its right to follow all avenues that will lead to a fair judgment, others, like 26-year-old Makoswonge Sibanda, argue that Pistorius has no mental problems.
I don't believe. I think it's just one of those gimmicks for those who could manage to escape jail. How can somebody who is mad can perform in the athletics and win champions? I don't believe.
Some are concerned the court might have set a precedent that will open floodgates for criminals to claim mental disorders to escape justice for their wrongdoing. Experts who will examine Pistorius are expected to compile reports that will be considered by the court when the trial resumes on June 30. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
In a keynote speech to the World Health Assembly, Melinda Gates, co-chair of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, urged delegates to endorse the first global action plan to end newborn deaths. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the conference in Geneva.
Health officials agree that newborn deaths are preventable, yet nearly 3 million babies die each year within their first 28 days of life. Many do not even get a chance to draw a breath. The World Health Organization says 2.6 million babies are stillborn, and more than 1 million of those deaths occur during labor. Because of this staggering toll, Melinda Gates says she hopes WHO will pass the Newborn Action Plan by the end of the week. At a news conference in Geneva, the philanthropist told journalists five low-cost interventions are very effective in saving newborns, including breastfeeding, methods of resuscitating newborns, preventing and treating infections, and so-called kangaroo care for premature babies. That technique involves prolonged skin-to-skin contact with the mother. Gates says Ethiopia, Rwanda, and Nepal are already applying these interventions with some success.
Simply by using the health care extension worker or health community worker platform that they've got and focusing on those newborn deaths, they've been able to bring down not just under five mortality, but newborn death rates as well. So we have those as models, and the other African nations and other countries around the world are looking at those three countries to learn what is actually possible by focusing on this.
Gates says Ethiopia's newborn death rate has gone down by 28% since it began focusing on this issue in the last 6 years. As part of the United Nations Millennium Development Goals, great progress has been made in cutting maternal and under five child mortality. But WHO reports South Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa have the highest numbers of newborn deaths every year, with India, Nigeria, and Pakistan topping the list. Gates says the issue of newborn deaths has been neglected as a consequence of focusing on maternal mortality.
They've seen so many mothers die in childbirth, so they'll focus immediately and sometimes exclusively, unfortunately, on the mother until they've got her in a state of making sure that she's going to survive, and then they turn to the newborn. And so quite often you'll get in a situation where the newborn then is gotten cool over time. Sometimes they'll do wrong practices in some countries. They'll actually scrub the vernix off of the baby, which will introduce infection.
Gates says it is important to make midwives and community health workers understand they should focus on both mother and child at the same time. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with handball. Tunisia's Africa Club Champions Cup winners, Esperance, pipped Egypt's African Cup winners, Cup holders, El Ahly 21-20, to win the men's Africa Super Cup in Oyo, Republic of Congo, on Monday night. In the women's contest, Angola's seven-time African Club Champions, Petro Atletico, outplayed perennial rivals, Republic of Congo's Interclub 33-26. Consequently, Esperance and Petro Atletico qualify for the World Club Championships, known as the Super Globe 2014, to be staged in Doha, Qatar, later this year. In football, South Africa is set to host the 2016 Women's Under-20 World Cup. The World Football Governing Body, FIFA, confirmed in Zurich, Switzerland. Egypt, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Finland, Northern Ireland and Sweden are bidding to stage the 2018 FIFA Women's Under-17 World Cup, while South Africa, England, France and New Zealand have their sights set on staging the 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup. FIFA will name the successful bid for these women's tournaments early next year. Staying in Zurich, Egypt is in a crowded field of 12 countries vying to stage the men's 2017 FIFA Beach Soccer World Cup. Others are Argentina, Bahamas, Brazil, Cayman Islands, Costa Rica, Ecuador, El Salvador, Germany, Trinidad and Tobago, the United Arab Emirates, and the United States of America. FIFA will name the successful bid in December. Turning to athletics, Kenya's world half marathon champion Geoffrey Kipsang Kamworor clocked a lifetime best of 27 minutes and 44 seconds to win the TSC World 10-kilometer Bangalore road race in southern India on Sunday. What's more, he bettered the previous course record of 27 minutes and 51 seconds by Eritrean Zerzene Tadesa at the inaugural edition of the race in 2008. In a similar vein, Kenya's Lucy Wangui Kabu clocked 31 minutes and 48 seconds to improve the women's course record. She shaves off 10 seconds from the previous mark set by Ethiopia's Ayeleo Wuda Yimar in 2010. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a very good day. Here's our listener mail for this Wednesday morning, May 21st.
Terrorism in Nigeria is becoming quite alarming. It's just Bono that people are actually being bombed. It went to Abuja, now it's just today. 200 people were killed due to two bomb blasts in Jos. The federal government should really find something to do about this issue of bombing in Nigeria. It's becoming another thing. I just pray that God will deliver us. This is Ayodele Olujide Oke. I call from Ibadan, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. That's it for this Wednesday, May 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, saying have a lovely day.
Time in Africa offers splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. From the classics of yesteryear to the hot tracks of the moment. I offer you what you need. Free ear therapy and mind massage. Join me. I'm Heather Maxwell
for Music Time in Africa every Saturday and Sunday at 0900 2000 and 2100 UTC.